Oh, right there, we had, and somebody said that was a little bit my show, Nothing Ever Happens. That was a very harsh call, I thought, by the, I might call him the executive producer, makes it sound as if we've got a big team here. But hi, you're with Nick from Nick's Nuggets, and pre the last Rockingham state election, we had Peter Hudson, not footballer, Peter Hudson, who was representing the Liberal Party. He came in and he made himself really available at any time, which was really, really good, and I appreciated it. And I've been lucky enough now to be able to score another interview with Peter Hudson. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Nick. It's great to be back here with you. And could I say from the outset, if I was half as good at football as I am at politics, I guarantee you I would be in a much, much better industry. I'd be out there with the Hawks. I had a good win over Fremantle, unfortunately.
So you're a Hawthorn man?
No, I'm a die-on-the-wall Freo supporter.
Oh, okay.
But my godfather is a die-on-the-wall Hawks guy. And he laments the fact that that my namesake is after a footballer for a team that I will never support.
Oh.
And you'll never catch me. I'll always be wearing the purple and white scarf when it comes to any time during the AFL season.
So did you get too many games, Peter?
Very rarely. Look, I do enjoy. I went over to the MCG a couple of weeks ago. I was over in Melbourne for work.
And yeah.
Just as you do, you find your way to the MCG on game day. That was the Eagles and the Demons last weekend or the weekend before.
Yes.
I managed to get over there. That was the first
weekend
time.
Before, yeah.
Yeah,
that's
weekend
right,
before.
Yeah.
So I managed to get over there. That was my first time at the MCG, actually, for a football game.
What do you think of it?
It's a large stadium. Look, this might be a hot take here. I understand that the MCG has a lot of history, and even when you walk in, you can feel the atmosphere between those walls. But I actually think that Optus Stadium is a much better stadium. We've got a great deal here in Perth. It's a brand new stadium. Sure, it's a bit smaller in capacity, but and it's got less prestige to it. But gee, I'll tell you what, I think Optus Stadium is one of the best pieces of infrastructure in the entire country. I think, in my view, it probably matches the MCG in my opinion.
I think too, like you say, there might be a bit of bang in the background at the moment as we're doing a few renos at the station. But yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And we talked off air about this, Peter, that there's culture and there's moving ahead.
Mm.
Which sort of nice little segue this, isn't it? Because you are now a councillor with on the Rockingham City Council, correct?
That's right. Yeah. So I think last time I spoke to you, we were still in the running for the Rockingham by-election. So that was at the retirement of then Premier Mark McGowan.
That's right.
For the Liberal Party for the Rockingham by-election, and we had a fantastic result out of that election. Didn't go our way as we would have hoped. But a great result nonetheless, and it springboarded me very neatly into the Rockingham City Council. So I lodged my nomination to run for local government. So I've now run for federal, state, and now local government, where I was elected in October of last year. So for people listening in the future, this is about 9 months of the date of recording now that I've been on Rockingham City Council, and gee, that's been a journey as well. You get all of the machinations of state and federal politics, but at the local level. So as a
seriously
Rockingham lover like me, being able to continue engaging with politics and with business and with governance in a local city role, it's been an absolutely fantastic and an exciting role so far.
So do you liaise with both federal and local?
Look, I tend to not personally much, and I should probably say at this point in time that I speak for myself as a councillor.
Yep.
I don't speak on behalf of the city.
Yep.
That's the role of the mayor.
Understandable.
The city certainly does have a great relationship with the state and federal department agencies, local members, of course. I don't have too much to do personally in reaching out to those departments and agencies, but I keep my foot in the door when it comes to those areas.
Sure.
Because I've run in those spaces before. I've got a very good understanding of stakeholder engagement between levels of government. In my view, this is one of the largest issues facing WA and Rockingham at a bit of a crossroads at this point in time. So something that I take very seriously is not just, I'm not just about rates, roads and rubbish. I'm very much about what is what's the next step for City of Rockingham, whether that's dealing with the state government or federal government. Sometimes we have to wrangle them, and I'm certainly not afraid to go out and do that.
It's Rockingham, again, and I was speaking off air, but, it's really hard as a member of the community. And I know they say, well, you can go to council meetings and this, that, the other, but let's be honest, I don't think a lot of us do, even though we're interested in what happens to rock and roll, I don't think we really take it to the next level. So maybe we get a little of information through the local paper, but I'll be honest, I think it's sort of scant, some of the stuff we get. So I believe we've got many thousands of people in the foreseeable future moving to Rockingham for the is it the submarine?
Yeah, for Submarine Rotational Force West, or that's a quite long name for what most people will know as AUKUS. And I think, and this is something that I'm continually chasing up at the council level, pushing this towards the state and the federal government, is how the city of Rockingham unlocks the opportunities that come with AUKUS. I'll say from the outset, there are a range of challenges that that we need to face, and it's not all sunshine and roses. We need to really get into gear, force action from the state and the federal government to prepare the city for AUKUS. When we're talking about the council level and the city level and what we're talking about for our residents, that comes more into around the infrastructure leading up to HMAS Stirling. So there's obviously $8 billion, which is going to be invested on the Navy base over the next 10 years, which is it's an astronomical number. But half of that, or not quite half, but definitely some of that funding needs to be for the community infrastructure in the lead up to the Navy base. So these are things like the local road network, which is already under pressure. We look at Park and Street Safety Bay Road leading up to the Navy base at peak hour. That's already crazy. But the thing that people raise, I suppose, the most with me is local housing. And we're already in a housing crisis. As you would know, I'm sure you've heard it from your guests on the show, that we're in a homelessness crisis as well in the city of Rockingham. That literally hundreds of people are sleeping rough in Rockingham in these cold winters. It's unbelievable. And now we're faced with the proposition that 2027, absolute minimum, we're going to have 700 people moving into our community, 700 sailors and their families from the US and the UK. They're moving into Rockingham, and they need to go on the same roads, they need to use the same schools, the same hospital, they need to use the same amenities, the same pubs, and we need to be ready for this. The rubber is about to hit the road. We've only got a couple of years in terms of development lead time, and so we need to get our educational facilities, our road infrastructure, all of these things that come with basically importing an extra 1,000 or more people into a community. We need to be prepared for this and levelling up Rockingham, because it's not just about housing the Americans and off they go to work on the Navy base. We need to get some really great benefits for the people of Rockingham as well. We're the ones that are the key stakeholders here. It's the city, it's the people that live in it, and we want the absolute best for our city. So that's where a lot of wrangling the state and federal government, they need to take the lead on this, but local government, we're certainly doing our best to hold them to account, and we're fighting for the best for all the people in our city.
You see, you know, somebody like myself, and I consider myself a layman in this regard, you think X amount of thousand, you know, them and their families, so you're saying thousands probably.
Yep.
And naturally you think, first thing that comes to your head is where they're going to get their homes. And that's, I won't say the only thing, to me that's, okay, where they're going to put them all. But, again, as a layman, I forget, schools, roads, hospitals, police, infrastructure, homes in there, I don't know. But you forget that. You know, you just think, oh, it's just find them houses, that'll be fine.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. And I think that's the one area where the government may be somewhat turning a blind eye to this and say, oh, the city will just sort it out, or the market will just sort it out. In my view, we need to take some very proactive leadership. It's we spoke about this when I was running for Parliament in the last cycle, is it's all about statesmanship. It's about, and to break that down for your listeners, it's about doing what's right for the community. Not necessarily what's popular. It's not what's going to win you votes in the next election. It's about what's doing right for the community with a long-term vision. We're talking about AUKUS, when these folks come here from the US and the UK, we're talking about a generational defining program. This is the next at least 30 to 40 years of development in our community. That's not taking away from the actual nuclear submarine capability, which is at least the next 80 years of defence capability. And of course, HMAS Stirling is the largest naval base in the Southern Hemisphere. We can't just turn a blind eye to this, because our city is literally on the doorstep. We're about 5 minutes from the Navy base right now. So it's something that which really represents a macro strategy and a massive investment opportunity for Rockingham. We just need to stick the landing. And that's where a lot of my work on council and my continuing work in politics and business has been, is focusing on, look, the wheels are spinning, we just need to get into gear. So that's my view.
It's an interesting, and we spoke about this too, like just because Rockingham has got the naval base and we're moving ahead, surely, and this is when I say surely, as a, in my mind, we should have a lot more, like we spoke about Mantra, going ahead in gangbusters, you know, like breweries and not having the carnival and getting rid of the carnival down there. And look, I'm not saying I agree with it, but I understand you can't really have a carnival for a few hundred or a few thousand people. Like, you know, you need to open it up. Where do people want to go? Whether you like it or not, they want to go to these breweries. And that's just progress, be it right or wrong, that's just progress. Yep. So I want to go. We're going to have all these people in Rockingham, and apart from the new development, that new hotel we were Rockingham about, do we have any plans in Rockingham that you know of?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, there are a few irons in the fire, and I'd be very happy to go into one of those. We'll pick up on the Rockingham Hotel, which you just mentioned. So the city obviously has given approval for the demolishment of that building. This is going to be very closely followed by an application to rebuild a brand new bar and short-stay accommodation at that site on the foreshore there. Anyone who's come along the Rockingham foreshore in the last, since I've been a kid, basically, has seen that the old Rockingham Hotel is a pretty dilapidated building. There's obviously that massive car park which is there, and it's been locked off, and that's nothing to do with the city. It's privately owned.
Yeah.
So we haven't been able to access that area for our residents. But now we're very exciting. We've been able to approve the demolishment of this building. The developer is committed to building a brand new hotel and pub on that location. We've seen the concept art, and it looks fantastic. The only thing is a matter of time. We just need people to get on with the project. And of course, we're facing the usual issues with the construction post-COVID, is supply chain, it's personnel, skilled labour. This continues to be an issue for developers, but the beauty is we've got that commitment there. It will happen. My very, very optimistic hope is that it will be done in time for the Americans coming in to Australia.
Oh, really?
Hopefully. It shouldn't be taking more than 3 years for them to put together this hotel. So, we should have the brand new Rockingham Hotel ready as almost like the jewel in the crown of the Rockingham foreshore, right when American and UK guests arrive on the submarine. So that's very exciting. But there is always a lot of emphasis on the Rockingham foreshore. I'm actually in Waikiki Safety Bay, so I always love to bring it back to my local area.
Yeah.
And that is the exciting development around there, which council has been working on, is the Waikiki Hotel.
Yeah, I saw that in the corner.
So you'll remember that back to when I was very young. That used to be the local haunt for everyone around my side of town.
Yeah.
And that obviously was knocked down quite a while ago. It's been sectioned off for years and years and years. Like, this has been a recurring issue coming through council for many years. But we have now gotten to the stage where we are getting close to being able to approve, or for the state government planning agency to be able to approve the new Waikiki Hotel. And that'll include a range of shops, including GP, cafe, restaurant, childcare centre, I believe, is in there as well, and the hotel itself, which faces out off the Waikiki foreshore. So that's another beauty that's going on there. So there are a range of things. There's a couple in Port Kennedy, Secret Harbour, Golden Bay, as they continue to develop. But not just the, you know, you're going out and having a drink at the pub sort of thing. There's a lot of light commercial things going on around East Rockingham as well. So there is a lot of development, and obviously defence industry is taking a major look into Rockingham and Kwinana, which falls just outside our jurisdiction. But having the Henderson Marine Complex on our back door, that's another huge opportunity for Rockingham. So I would say, even though you know, the local paper may not pick up on everything that's going on in Rockingham, when I talk to businesses and when I talk to government agencies, they are working like anything to get this stuff moving and on the ground. It's just a matter of, I think, a bit of leadership from the top down, and unlocking those opportunities, address those challenges, and then we have a really great next level up for Rockingham ready in the wings.
It's funny, isn't it? I was speaking to a fellow Rockinghammy. What do you call rocker? What
do
you call
Rockinghamian? Yeah. I don't know. I suppose
Rockinghamian. I like
Fremantleite. That's up the road, Fremantleite, and a Rockinghamian. That would be my. That's what I have historically.
I love
used,
it.
Anyway,
and I sort of like we were chatting about old and new, and you know, you've got to move whether we like it or not, because progress, that is progress. Do you think, and I've spoken to a few people in Rocky, and I said, yeah, well, we're like a little, nobody knows about us. Like, you know, you talked about Waikiki and Safety Bay, and I quite often drive along that road. And, you know, it's sort of happy sad, Peter, because when I first moved to Perth, I used to drive down the West Coast Highway and Sorrento. And you had all these old holiday houses there, and that was Sorrento. And now they're all two-story, three-story, absolute million, two, whatever, dollar homes. Do you, and I think just by progression, that will happen around the Safety Bay, and it's still a few in Rockingham area, the old houses. So people saying, oh, I'll miss that. Do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, look, I think, as you say, there is a bit of the march of time and progress that does come with this. But there are a lot of locals who enjoy that Rockingham is a bit like a hidden paradise.
I
certainly feel that as well. I've got sentiment for that.
Yeah.
But look, I do see Rockingham, it's going to come down to, as time marches on, as publicity continues to, you know, wrangle itself around Rockingham and what that means for our community, I do see us going a bit more like a Scarborough or a City Beach or indeed a Mandurah. And look, I look at those places now and I think, well, that would be fantastic for Rockingham. Yes, we will lose some of our old school identity of, you know, the old Rockingham suburb where, you know, my grandparents grew up.
Yeah.
But that is progress, isn't it? Because that is exactly what happened to Sorrento and City Beach.
Exactly.
I don't think anyone in Sorrento or City Beach would like to trade in their $2 million home for a shack on the beach. That's just an intimation. I'm sorry to those people if they have some strong feelings otherwise.
Yeah.
But no, I do see us going that way. It is a matter of time. But to me, it's about how we do that sustainably. And we talk about sustainability.
That's the other thing.
You've got the economic, social and environmental aspects of sustainability. Everyone seems to go for environmental these days, but more importantly, or as importantly, it's a tricorn of environmental, social and economic. Social, we need to bring the people along with us. We know that we're moving into the next phase of Rockingham, what that means for us. Economic, we need to have businesses and commercial enterprises which are viable. We can't have people living in this town or, you know, a Navy base operating without the business and economic backing behind that. And then obviously environmental is, yes, we're going to develop, and yes, we're not going to look the same in 40 years' time, but there is a way that we can preserve a lot of our natural environment and actually enhance that. There's a lot of capacity for us to bring both up, whether it be built environment and natural environment, bring those things together and level them both up at the same time.
Yeah.
So there's some great great development opportunities here. A lot of that's going to require investment, and that's another key issue of where we are in Rockingham.
Do you think, Peter, again, I'm just, you know, that... with investment, I'm just asking a question here, and it may sound crass, but people won't invest if they can't make money. And I would assume if you look at Rockingham, people go, I will invest because I can make money. So what I'm trying to say is I think it's a, I wouldn't have a clue. I think it's a given that people will invest.
Yeah, I think so. And look, the city's actually launched a investment in Rockingham for businesses program that it's running now. It's kicked off recently. That'll be a program of advertising, investment advertising that'll run for around 6 months, I believe. So that the city is proactively seeking out these businesses.
Yeah.
But I think that there is generally a lot of interest from all sorts of different industries in Rockingham.
Yeah.
You've got defence industry is obviously a given. But I think another one that's going to pop up big time, especially in the Kwinana industrial area and the Rockingham East industrial zone, is the critical minerals industry, which is just taking off, going gangbusters. In terms of the commodity prices, so we'll see all of these critical minerals processing and explorers from the mining sector. So we've already got the Tianqi Lithium Company is in Kwinana. The Chinese Premier, when he came to Australia the other week, he came to Kwinana and visited that site. Funnily enough, that was a Chinese-owned site, but never mind. It's better than nothing. So there are a whole range of different areas where companies are investing in Rockingham. There is interest in Rockingham. The one thing that and I work in defence industry and the mining industry, for full disclosure, the one thing that these industries really want is that government leadership. They need to see that leadership from the top down, because we in Australia we face a very hefty regulatory environment. We often say, Why don't we build more in Australia? Why don't we hire more Australian people? It's because we actually live in a very tough red tape environment for Australia. It's things like, and I'm certainly for the minimum wage, but there are a whole range of measures that sit around business, which actually make it quite expensive to do business in this country. And that is actually a role of the government. The government legislates this red tape, and that actually stifles local business. So when I hear from small business right up to the big mining companies, the number one thing that they need to see from government is that leadership in rolling back red tape. How can we make business more efficient? How can we get the best for the local community?
It's a difficult thing, isn't it? Because in my lifetime, the bureaucracy, and I might be wrong, I'm just saying it, my observation is that bureaucracy has grown and it makes it hard to get things done because there's more people who put their, when I was in sales, used to be called clipping the ticket, that people had to make money all the way along. Like, you do. And I sort of think, is bureaucracy a little bit like that? Oh, well, actually, yeah, well, if we get involved in this, we've got to say these people have got to do this. So they have to do that. And then they're, oh, well, if they do that, well, we better do this. And you get all this flow-on effect. Is that a reasonable?
Yeah, look, I think that is reasonable. And I think you see that at every level of government. Perhaps it would be most accentuated at the Commonwealth level of government because they're often intermingling between departments, which then have to talk to the state government, which then have to talk to a local government. My experience with the Rockingham City Council is they're actually quite proficient at stakeholder management. So they're, for example, if we want to kick off a project, we want to build a new skate bowl out in Port Kennedy somewhere. I'm not saying we're going to do that, but if that were the case and what we were looking to do, then the city would initiate that process, and that would right from the get-go go into a consultation, be it with the community, local businesses around, the developers and tenderers of the actual project itself. So I think as a city, we do quite a good job of maintaining relationships between between different areas. But I think certainly there are examples within broader government in which, the bureaucracy has become insane and just, out of this world. I look back to when we were discussing this issue last year was the Aboriginal Cultural Heritage Act, and that was a state government piece of legislation.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I remember that.
And you remember that was an absolute disaster of a piece of legislation.
Yeah, so I do remember that.
And fancy why that ended up being such a bad bill on paper is because it was surrounded by bureaucrats who had no real life experience on in terms of what they were legislating on and the practical impact. So what the bill itself maybe was fine in intent, but it was the practicality of the bill which everyone was upset about. And that's where that bureaucracy kicks in. And that's an egregious example of where a government has over bureaucratized government
bureaucratized.
Bureaucratized. We may have just created a new word. I'm going to call up Griffiths. Oxford Dictionary 7th edition. Here we go.
No, it's look, I mean, I know you're not pressed for time, but I know you have a lot of things, but there's so many things I want to ask about. And one of them would be, I think there's two things that maybe come to my mind, is that if somebody says, you got to go to Perth. And I go, yep. And they say, the beach is magnificent. And you go, what beach are you going to go? Oh, I'm going to go to a city beach. Well, I want to go to Indiana Tea House at Cottesloe. And you go, well, what about Rockingham Beach? Where? And yet we're one of the best beaches, stretches of beaches in WA. And yet nobody, I dare say, if you look on one of those travel things, they always say, I've got to go to, even Hillary's, but nobody says, you've got to go to Rockingham.
Yeah, you're right. Now, I think that's it's another hidden jewel in our town is the Rockingham foreshore. I'm not sure if you caught a few months ago, ABC Radio Perth ran a poll.
Yes.
And it was a democratic poll of which is the best foreshore in Perth, and they had all of those that you mentioned, City Beach, Cot Beach, and the Rockingham foreshore came out a mile in front
for the best beach
in Perth. We actually, the city was presented with a placard and for being voted by the people as the best beach in Rockingham. And you talk about the businesses that feed off of that as well, that whole foreshore strip, or even around the Safety Bay foreshore strip as well. There's so much potential in that space.
Is there what?
And we have I think the greatest beach in Perth. It's fantastic. You can go around the north side to avoid the wind, west side if you're a kite surfer, stand up paddle. There are so much opportunity. And I'm a big fisher as well, so I'm very much across the beaches and the ocean around this area.
So can I ask where you fish, or is that a secret?
Oh, these are state secrets. I won't ask where you, but
what do you fish for? That's a fair question.
All sorts of things. It's just like everyone else in Rockingham, November, December, it's all crayfish, so we go out the back of Garden Island. It's a great way to keep up with what's going on the Navy base when you go out to crayfishing. You just cast your eye over.
It's a business trip.
Exactly. We'll write it off on tax. I wish. The fuel gets expensive. But no, otherwise it's just squidding. Crabs we used to get in Coburn Sound, obviously. Most people go down to Mandra for that now. But even just your King George Whiting off Port Kennedy or off Warmbra Sound is a fantastic day out on the water. Even if you don't catch much, it's great.
Yeah,
we've got such beautiful coastline here. So it'd be a shame not to use it.
I think so. And that's where we chatted before about preservation as regards, and also but being able to develop. Now, again, I'm asking because I haven't lived in Rockingham all that long, but up around, where is it? I'm just trying to think. It might be Safety Bay, something Point, is there?
Point Perrin?
That's right, yep. Point Perrin, that's what I want. I've been there a few times, it's beautiful. Yeah. But there's, I'm going to get into trouble here. Unless you knew it was there, would you go there? Does that make sense, Peter?
Yeah, absolutely. No, look, Point Perrin is... it could be one of the jewels in the crown of Rockingham. In fact, this might be a hot take, but it could be the King's Park of the South. That's my honest view. It's got such potential there.
It's got
such history. If you go through a walk through Point Perrin, it's the southern tip of the Fremantle Fortress, and that's
from
the 1940s when Western Australia was under threat by Japanese subs. They built gun emplacements from Point Perrin all the way up to Exmouth.
Point
Perrin is the most southern tip where they were watching out. So there are gun emplacements there, old radio towers, comms towers. This is all Australian history. And I've actually been involved in restoration of the bunkers and things like that before. And it's so interesting. So it's something place that I really recommend people get out to. But you're right. We don't do a great job of advertising it. And we don't, the facilities that are out there are none. You've got a smallish car park. And I'm a diver, and we go out there on a Saturday morning, go diving. That's all the car parking done. There's a little coffee cart that rolls there's not even a toilet block or anything. There's not even a cycle path or a footpath out there. So if you've got tourists coming from overseas, they can get a bus down to where Memorial Drive meets Point Perrin Drive. That's as far as you can. And then you've got to walk 2 kilometres down to the actual point.
Is that right?
And there's no safety or anything. You've got to walk on the road. Not to mention there are 8 tents of homeless families living along the Point Perrin Drive now on the stretch out to Point Perrin, because the only place they can go. So that there's a whole range of issues there, and we just need a significant amount of money and political will injected into that area. We could make this into an eco-tourist national park if we wanted. It could be a fantastic facility where we could take the dog out on a Sunday afternoon for a walk, or get the kids out on a Saturday morning, ride your bike and go for a walk through the Fremantle Fort, learn about the history of this country. We really, really should be a bit more proactive on developing Point Perrin in a sustainable way. That's important, but yeah.
Excuse me. I think over time, especially in this day and age, you're finding a lot of... governments, whatever you want to call it, councils, whatever, they're learning to keep the history, and like you say, the bunkers and all of these sort of things, they're learning to keep that and at the same time modernise it, so that you might have a cafe, you might have, tours or this, that, the other. They're managing to do it. So it's not a case of, forget it, we'll just knock it all down and just put up fancy hotels. No, they're not. They're actually... managing to, like you say, cross it, and there's so much potential there. I dare say, how many people would know Point Perrin?
I think if you live in Rockingham, you would at least know it. But whether you visit there ever, Is another question. So I think it's mainly used by divers. There's a couple of boot camp people that run up the big stairs, and then other than that, there's the young people that go there late at night and get up to nefarious activities.
So, nefarious. Yeah,
so that's my understanding of the area anyway. But people outside of Rockingham, unless you if you go on TripAdvisor and say things to do in Rockingham, Point Perrin will come up. Yeah. The fact is, it's just not accessible. It's out of the way, and there's no way to get there, and there's nothing really there when
you. I know what you mean.
There's the museum aspect, the open air museum aspect of it, but in terms of what else is there, you're probably not going to spend half a day as a tourist going out to Point Perrin just to walk around and see nothing and then come back into.
That's my point, and I'm not being rude. In this day and age, that's what a lot of people want. They don't want, if you look at some other places, and I'm, talking off the top of my head here, if you look at other places, say, like even to a degree, Tasmania and New Zealand, they tend to build for tourists. Yeah. And they haven't wrecked it. Like you go to New Zealand, a lot of places are just what they were, but they've put, I'm not saying you have to have a cafe, but they put something there, so, you can go there, and like you say, you just don't want a coffee there, and you might say, wouldn't mind something else, and go, well, it's coffee or that.
I think the very, very minimum should be, we could at least have a toilet block out there, like, come on. We've done this at every other facility in the entire city, and I understand there are environmental concerns, but come on, like, if the political will and the money is there, why can't we get it done?
To me,
this is a common sense question that everyone in Rockingham would be like, well, it just makes sense. Like, why wouldn't you do it? So that's certainly something that I'm advocating for, and I'll be pushing hard at the next election. As you know, it's election season coming up in the next 6 to 8 months, and there are some serious questions to be answered about what have local members and the governments actually committed and done for the local area, and What will they commit? What will they commit to? What can they promise for the next 4 years and the next vision for the city?
Question. I have a lot of questions, don't I, Peter? So let's just say we'll use Point Perrin because we've been chatting about it. So who do the people in Rockingham, if they're interested in, like, with making it a toilet block, whatever we say, is that a state thing that you go to Magenta with, or is that a I know they're both Labor, or is that something you're going to Madeline Fields with?
If we're speaking specifically about development at Point Perrin, it won't be in the remit of the federal government.
Right.
The funding would certainly have to come from the state government, so that would be the member for Rockingham. The actual delivery of the project, I suspect, would be undertaken by the local government.
So right.
In effect, that money would have to be committed by the state government, handed over to the local government for delivery and completion. This is a very normal way that we do things. Almost all projects that the state government commits to are actually delivered by local government, funnily enough. But the money and the commitment is the bigger issue. I'm sure the city would love to get in there and get it done. But it is, Point Perrin is actually state government owned land, so it needs to be, and it's covered under environmental approval. So it needs to be passed off by the state government before the local member could ever even dream of committing money to a project like that. So there's a whole lot of layers. We go back to bureaucracy. There's a whole lot of layers that need to be addressed, and we haven't even spoken about the federal level of it, which isn't in the remit of this particular project. And there's this much bureaucracy in just a state to local. Project. It's a huge amount to navigate, and it's not easy. And to an extent, I feel that is why a lot of areas in Rockingham and a lot of infrastructure has just fallen by the wayside, because it's not easy. Delivering these things is tough, and it takes a lot of good people, it takes time, and it takes money. And when you don't have one of those three things, then it's very easy for these things to fall over. And people like you and I are left wondering for the rest of our lives, where was the development happening in Rockingham? Why didn't they try harder? Where's the best for our community now?
Yeah, and like you say, it's a lot of it is political. If the particular government wants to spend money and that's just politics. I understand that. So I know you're running short of time, Mr. Hudson. That's a respect. So you enjoying your time at council? I've got one more question to ask you.
Right?
Enjoying your time at a council?
Absolutely. Look, it's an exciting journey so far, is what I tell people. I'm, and you would have picked this up in our chats last year, but I'm very much a big picture thinker, a macro strategy thinker. I take broad strokes and I whittle them down into workable campaigns and things like that. But the one thing that I've found very surprising from council is just how much I've enjoyed getting into the nitty-gritty local planning area within local government. Because you think, oh, you know, as I said before, I'm not a rotes raids rubbish guy. I'm a big picture thinker. But actually getting into the guts of what we deal with in local government, and, you know, okay, so we take the Rockingham Hotel, for example, looking at, okay, these are the concept drawings. These are the dimensions it's going to take. These are the 200-odd conditions that the developer has to deal with to build. Actually getting into the nitty-gritty of all that, understanding it from the inside out, that's been really, really interesting to me. So that's something I didn't think I would be wrapped in. But, you know, it's been an exciting learning experience, I suppose.
Jeez. And I don't know, this is not, I understand, what I'm trying to say is, this is just a general question, and I don't know the answer, but I know every council... And it's just life that we had got our, I think I got my rates yesterday. Do you know, and I don't know what percentage, do you know what percentage we went by or not?
Yeah, so we ended up settling on 4.2% rate increase on last year.
Yeah.
That actually, when you put it in perspective of all of the numbers, it sits about middle of the pack for the rest of Western Australia. So some of them went below CPI. Take the city of South Perth, for example. However, they are certainly eating into their monetary reserves. So that presents a sustainability issue for, you know, you can't just continue eating into your reserves because you'll have no money left.
That's right.
There are other jurisdictions. I remember last year, like Fremantle, they had to put their rates up 9%.
Nine
whopping percent. And that was because they did some extra measures during COVID. And, you know, that's their decision. To compensate for that, they had to put up a 9% increase. So the city has a business plan of 10 years where the rates are somewhat... mapped out in terms of it's obviously subject to economic conditions, but the beauty of the rates that we've set, even though, yes, I understand we're in a cost of living crisis, but the beauty of the rates that we've done this year and the year past is that it allows us to set up a lower rates base threshold for the years to come. So in the long run, we're actually going to try to save residents as much money as we possibly can. And in my view, cost of living crisis, we need to be doing everything we can to help our residents.
Compared with things like meat, fruit and veg, groceries, whatever, 4%. I mean, if my grocery bill went up 4%, I'd be jumping off the roof in happiness. So honestly, 4%, I wasn't questioning, because I understand it. I mean, of course it's got to go up. Insurance has probably gone up 30%.
Yep.
And rates have gone up 4%. I don't have time, but my last question, what's your take on the American election? Your take on it?
Yeah, look, it'll come as no surprise. I'm no fan of Joe Biden. I certainly think he's, to put it bluntly, his past is used by date. However, I do think it is probably too late for them to install a new
candidate.
That's
the interesting thing about it.
Because the election is in November. We're recording this on the 16th of July. This is, very, very close to hitting the road here. So I think it's too late for them to introduce a new candidate. So I think it is going to be a matchup of Donald Trump and Joe Biden. It was just in the news this morning. Donald Trump has been selected as the Republican nominee. So he's locked in. It looks like we're set for Donald Trump to become president again. It's taken the world by storm this week is the assassination attempt on Donald Trump. What a shocking example of democracy gone wrong, that is. It's, to the point where people are trying to assassinate the leader of the opposition. You imagine if someone did that to Peter Dutton. He's the leader of the opposition in Australia. And imagine if at a rally there was an assassination attempt. What state of the world is America living in?
Well, it's funny, just before you go, I read something this morning whoever it is, I'm not, America is the greatest country in the world, is what they said. And I read up, alcohol and drug-related deaths have doubled in 30 years. Sixth largest incarceration rate in the world behind, I think it's El Salvador, they're above them. But the one that struck me is basically, and I'm generalising, every other country in the world, their average age of dying has moved up, say like from 65 to 70. In America, it's actually gone down.
Yep.
They're just about the only country. And you think, you know, I'm just a nuts and bolts man. How is that the greatest country in the world?
Yep. Yeah, you're right. And actually digging deeper into those statistics, you'll find a lot of those numbers are actually coming out. The lion's share proportion of those numbers are coming out of Democrat-run states, so which is the party of Joe Biden. So it's and you contrast them with a lot of the states in the South, which are controlled by the Republicans.
Exactly.
You almost see a polar opposite effect in terms of and of course America's got plenty of problems on either side of the aisle. Oh, but it's very interesting that this progressive experiment of we're going to lean into the left and all these culture wars, it's actually resulted in very negative outcomes for the people in the local community. So I'll end on that I'm very pleased that Australia is in a very different place. Fortunately, we have our disagreements, and we can have our disagreements.
Of course.
But we don't face the same issues as the United States. I'm very thankful for that.
Me
too. But I wish the best of luck to both candidates in the presidential race. Yeah.
Well, it's been a pleasure, Peter, and maybe in a couple of months or 3 months, if you'd be kind enough, if you can, I don't want you on the spot, to come in again. I think it's good for people of Rockingham to understand what's going on with the infrastructure and things like that, because we generally, as I say, don't get much news. Would that be okay in 2 or 3
Absolutely.
Months?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, we'll definitely line it up. Absolutely. Oh, maybe we can do a full election analysis of the US when it comes time.
Whoa, wouldn't that be good? thanks again. Brains. It's always a pleasure. It's great having you in here. You're a very interesting and alert young man. Compared with me, and not so much alert and old. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Peter. We'll see you again.